sack. Is that all you get for your money? And if that's what you have in mind, yeah, if that's what you're all about, good luck moving up, 'cause I'm moving out.
Good morning and welcome to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. You're listening to Becky Ivins, broker of Movers Real Estate Company and the leader of the Becky Ivins Real Estate Team. And I have with me Mark Carr, who's also a member of our team. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Becky.
Okay. And then we have got Ron Shalott, our attorney at law.
I'm so looking forward to this.
Okay.
I love listening to Ron. I always learn so much. So it's going to be a good one today.
Well, Ron, the pressure's on you.
I was here 2 weeks ago, and we had a young girl here as the assistant, and now we've got Mark. So
I know. Well, it's an upgrade in age.
Yes, it's a downgrade in ability, but it's an upgrade in age.
So we're what, a Gen what?
Gen X, Y, Z? I don't know.
Boomer, maybe. Maybe he's a boomer. I'm in the baby boom, so I can say that.
No, I think I'm right on the edge of Gen X, like right at the beginning of what – depends on who you're listening to.
Okay.
So I'll take either one.
All right.
You're Gen W.
W.
Right
W.
Right before X. Well, we are going to continue our conversation, and we're also going to maybe cover a couple of things that are – proposed legislation for that might change our change the way we do business.
Yeah, those laws those pesky laws.
I know, except these have not been put into law. They're just proposed legislation for the state of Oklahoma.
Which some of them make sense and some of them don't.
Well, I particularly like the death certificate being available at a tag agency. I thought that's a good one.
There are some that will make our lives easier, and there are some that will make our lives more complicated, but they all have a purpose. The legislators get some kind of win from either news or from a constituent or from a group that wants some type of legislation. For example, I know our estate planning group looks at things such as trust decanting, which is getting stuff out of a trust if you've got an irrevocable trust and you can't get rid of it, but you need to move the stuff out of it for a number of reasons.
Oh, my gosh. So. Ron, yesterday we dealt with so many things.
Mm-hmm.
I had a court record in my file from a property that was owned by a trust. I didn't go back before I listed this property. And because this person had called me originally when it was in a trust, I make the mistake of thinking it's going to remain in the trust. I mean, it's still in the trust. So I ask him for his memorandum of trust, and I don't get anything. I think I got the memorandum of trust. So we assume this is in a trust, and we're going to sign it out in a trust. And then we're told, as we walk into closing, you realize the wife is going to need to sign. And I said, well, I did not realize the wife needed to sign. The ex-wife needed to sign. And so we get there and realize that there's a new wife since he originally called us. And she did need to sign the deed to sign out on that property. So it not only was not no longer, it had been taken out of the trust because the ex-wife got the trust.
That's a soap opera.
Well, but legally it was a real challenge.
Sure.
Because the person, the new wife, was tied up in court on a murder thing, and she didn't have her phone with her.
This even gets better.
It does get better.
Well, I mean, we can't.
I want some popcorn.
We can't find. So finally, We call David Prater's office and have somebody go to the courthouse to let her know that she needs to sign this document. Now, this is the same transaction where we have had, it was supposed to close 3 weeks ago.
I assume this lady was an attorney with the district attorney's office and not the murder defendant.
And I can't discuss that.
Okay.
We've hit non-disclosure issue, Ron.
But neither of the two, frankly. But
we are intrigued, aren't we?
Yes. Well, I'm trying to keep confidential. Right. Confidential,
sure.
Right. But these are the issues. I mean, I don't talk about the people involved.
Right.
I just talk about the issues we encounter. And there was an IRS lien on this property. We were supposed to close 3 weeks ago. The guy knew how much he owed. However, we couldn't get a statement from the IRS as to how much he owed. They have a lien against the property.
But they wouldn't say how much?
It took 3 weeks to get a payoff from the IRS.
Wow.
Well, it actually 3 weeks past our proposed closing, so it took even longer than 3 weeks to get that.
Yeah.
The payoff from the IRS. And I said, don't you think they should just be able to push a button and say, well, this is the payoff as of this date? Well, so that was the push yesterday at this closing because the payoff was only good until Monday because that's how they issued it. So it had to close on Friday to get the money overnighted, wired to them by Monday. So we had to physically send an agent to the courthouse to get the signature with a notary, right? So sometimes we run into some really, I guess,
that's real life. I mean, it gets complex, which is why we love having Ron Shalhot around, because these issues of trust get complicated.
And all this was kind of covered by Chicago Title, because Chicago Title is the one that we were going to, that cleared the title for us.
Well, to unpack that a little bit, just so our listeners fully understand, you have a trust agreement. Now, the trust agreement sets out the terms of the trust, what happens, but it doesn't always say what's in it. It just says what happens to manage the trust, what happens if the trust creator is incapacitated or dies. Then you put things into the trust. You fund it, F-U-N-D. Fund the trust. You put stuff in there. Now, that once that stuff is in the trust, if it's a revocable trust, it can be changed, amended, property can be put in, taken out, that kind of thing. It can be altered. And that's what you had, that kind of situation. You said you asked for a memorandum of the trust. Just so everybody knows, what that is a summary of of the name of the trust, who operates the trust. It doesn't say a whole lot about it. It just lets people know that the Ivins Trust, you can go to Becky Ivins as the trustee, or if Becky Ivins is deceased or not around, you go to Mark Carr as the trustee, and they can rely upon that. And that is what's filed of record with the county, is the memorandum, not the entire trust. So you have to go to the trust agreement itself to see exactly what it says in terms of distribution, what goes in, what comes out. In your situation, they remove stuff from the trust. Apparently didn't bother to tell you they did that. But once you remove things from the trust, it's now in an individual's name or an LLC, wherever it goes. So that's what your situation is. Or you can transfer from one trust to another trust if you wish to do it that way.
Well, and the nice thing about that, my thing yesterday was that the seller and the new wife, very intelligent people, doctoral level people, and they could follow along. They were sophisticated when it comes to property ownership. So they could very easily understand all this. So we moved at the speed of light, practically, and we got that done and filed by 5 o'clock, and this came up at 3:15.
But what happens is when you put it back into the individual's name, out of the trust, then the individual has the property. If they have a spouse, under Oklahoma law, you need the spouse to also sign on the property, because it could be claimed as homestead by the spouse. So the title examination standards require that you have the spouse also sign on that deed, or that the deed say they're unmarried.
Right.
Now, if it's in a trust, that's a whole different situation. But where you put it into an individual, now you've got that issue.
Well, we've got more to talk about, and we have got a little bit of a non-compliance issue on mortgage rates being advertised. Saw a mortgage rate, sent it to Dean Riddell, and he says, non-compliant the way that's advertised. So to keep you from being duped, stay tuned. We're going to talk about it right after this break with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. You listeners, you people, Ron thinks that you're going to remember that we've already talked about some of this stuff. We have. But if I forget from time to time some of the intricacies of this, I'm kind of thinking you might too. So first we're going to...
NMLS number 196-895.
We're talking to Dean Riddell, SWBC Mortgage. Good morning, Dean.
Good morning, Becky. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great. I sent you an advertisement yesterday that said it was an email that came across to one of the agents on my team, and
right.
It said 2.99% FHA, just come refi.
That was about it.
And to help people not get duped on this, point out the things that were not in that advertisement that are required to be in that advertisement.
Well, you get into False and Deceptive Trade Practices Act, and you get, as a lender, you've also got to disclose the APR for the rate that is reflected and associated.
Annual percentage rate.
You have to have disclosures in there with regard to equal opportunity housing, subject to credit. I mean, there are bullet points that have to go in line with any rate that's disclosed. It just can't be a number put out that's not substantiated with what the regulators require.
And then who are the regulators? Like, if I wanted to turn this guy in that sent that email, who would I go to?
Well, you could go to the Oklahoma Department of Consumer Credit. You could go to Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. Becky, you and I have done this a long time, and yes, rates are down. Rates are historically, they're on the downward trend. And so consumers see a rate, as you know, and they don't know necessarily what's associated with the rate that they're seeing, which gets into why you've got to disclose items such as APR, subject to credit, because, let's be honest, that 2.99 doesn't apply to everyone.
Well, it applies to no one without any upfront fees, right?
Right, right.
Because they're going to require a point in order to get that rate. Or maybe two.
Or two.
And
yeah,
a point is 1% of the amount of the loan.
Correct.
So if it's a $150,000 loan, that's $1,500 interest being paid up front in order to buy down the long-term interest. Or if it's 2 points, it's $3,000 you pay up front.
Exactly.
And that's fine. If you're planning to stay there a long time, that might be a great investment, but it needs to be advertised.
It's got to be up front. It's got to be disclosed. Using that same number, I could have said 2.75 is available, but you better disclose the terms that go along with the 2.75, i.e. the points that you're referencing, but you also got to have the credit disclosures in there too. It's something that, you and I, we see out there on occasion, but we've all got to stay in our lane, do what we're called to do, and do it right, and let's not overlook the fact that rates are down. It's a great time to reset, purchase a home, refinance, whatever it may be.
If you're sitting on a 4.5% interest,
sure.
Or a 5.5% interest, you need to talk to Dean about your refinance, because he's going to explain to you where, at what point in time is the break even. If you're thinking about, I have people that call me to list their property the month that they just refinanced.
Right.
And
right.
I'm thinking, why would you refinance first? It's not an assumable loan that you refinance to. So.
And Becky, and last week, I had a young lady come to my office. She'd been in the house since 2008. And I think her rate was 6.25%. So on the flip side, I'm over there, across from her, thinking, I probably should be the third time you have refinanced since that period of time. But I think the consumers don't know who to turn to, who to trust, and they need to lean on you, lean on me. If it makes sense, I'll tell them. If it doesn't make sense, I'll tell them. But for someone to be in a 6.25% environment here in 2020, it's kind of fascinating.
Now, there's something, what if you've lost your job and then regained a job and your credit kind of went to pot? If you're on a VA loan, you can do a is it called Streamline?
Yeah, it's a VA interest rate reduction loan. Literally, there's nothing easier.
And you don't have to have an appraisal. You don't have to do anything except get the interest rate reduced.
Correct.
I mean, there's a little bit to it, but it's not a qualification thing.
The key thing, we're doing two of those right now, and there's no credit check, there's no employment check, there's no appraisal.
It's just refinancing at a lower rate.
Yep, exactly.
So to get the information on this, all you have to do is go to BeckyIvins.com and look at the tab on the page that says Favorites, Becky's Favorites, because the contact information there is, these are people that I personally trust and that I have done business with most of the time for a very long period of time, years. And Dean and I have done business for, has it been 30 years, Dean?
It's been a long time.
It has been a very, very long time.
Yeah, it's been good.
And, but I know him to be truthful and of integrity, and he's not going to steer you the wrong direction. So thank you, Dean. Dean Riddell, SWBC Mortgage. Go to BeckyIvins.com or just call me, 722-3232, and we'll give you the contact information. Okay, Ron, we've got a couple of minutes, maybe three. Lead us in the right direction.
Well, last time we ended up about the transfer on death deed, which is a way to transfer property. When you pass away, your property can go through probate, whether you don't have a will or if you've got a last will and testament. You can go through the probate process where the court then oversees a sale. So you have that option. You have the transfer that automatically occurs if you have a joint tenancy with right of survivorship, which has to be created at the time of deeding. Or you can also utilize a trust by putting it into the trust, and then upon the contingent event, which would be death, then the trust says exactly what happens to that property. Another way we have out there is the transfer on death deed, which is the topic that we ended up with 2 weeks ago, which was about that, which is where an individual actually files of record a notice that they will that it transfers upon their death to a beneficiary or several beneficiaries, actually. It can be more than one. But you have to be careful about that, because if you have a joint tenancy with the right of survivorship, it does not supersede that JTWROS. It doesn't supersede the right of survivorship. Joint tenancy with right of survivorship.
There you go.
That's right.
But it doesn't supersede that. So if you are not the last joint tenant to survive, if your spouse or whoever else is on the title as with rights of survivorship survives you, then your transfer on death deed does not go into effect. It doesn't work.
How about if you've got one child? You want to be sure that this child gets the house, but not before both of you die. You don't want to give it to her upon one death. You want the spouse to get it.
That's true. And you can do a transfer and death deed at that point. You could do it with a trust. You can do it with a will at that particular point. If you have one child, it's much simpler than if you have blended families, which are children from prior relationships that you have or your spouse has or both of you have. So there are some complications when you need to sit down and talk with legal counsel about what options you have.
Well, and that's why we're here. If you have a question, give us a call, 840-1000, and we're going to see you on the other side of the news. So stay tuned, and we'll have more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. You're listening to Becky Ivins, Ron Shalott, and Mark Carr. How's that?
I love it.
You've got the trifecta here. So, okay. Come on, baby, tell me what's the word, a word of. Everybody say, when you hear the call, you got to get it underway. It is time for our word of the day, brought to you by Robbins Roofing, where their word every day is trust. You can trust Robbins Roofing to just do a real small repair or replace an entire roof. They are familiar with the current codes, so that if you need underlayment, well, you need underlayment. But if you need new decking, they're going to know what to do about it. So Robbins Roofing, 728-3700. Our word of the day today, you mentioned it, Ron.
Uh-oh.
Probate.
Oh, my.
That's a confusing thing for a lot of people. What does probate actually mean?
It is, and actually we all tend to use it incorrectly. We over-apply it, really.
Okay.
We don't necessarily misapply it. We over-apply it and use it to talk about a lot of things that it really isn't. When you think of probate, if you think of probe, you're probing something, it comes from the Latin probo, which means to approve or to test. Probate actually is to prove as genuine or authentic, for example, to prove as genuine or authentic a person's last will and testament. Is this their last will? Is this their last testimony, which is the testament part of last will and testament? Is this their last statement? The law requires us in Oklahoma, at least, to have two witnesses and a notary on a last will and testament, unless it's holographic, all done in the handwriting of the person creating the will, dated and signed. Whole different topic we'll get into maybe the next time I'm here. Some states require three witnesses, but probate is really just the testing or proving that that is the last will and testament. Now your next question is, what if there is no will, Mr.
Right. Clark? I mean, don't you still have to go to probate?
Well, you go to what's called probate court, but actually, after the will is admitted to court as the last will and testament, it has been probated. It's been proven. Everything else after that is estate administration. So technically, if you don't have a will, it's all estate administration. Everything that goes into the estate, try to find out what are the assets, are there any debts out there? If so, what are they? How to apply the assets to that, and then the court directs what happens to those assets that is in that estate. The court oversees it. Without a will, you have the intestate succession laws of Oklahoma and other states, if you're in another state, that says how it goes. If you've got a surviving spouse or children or just other relatives, collateral relatives, how it goes. The will itself, though, if it has been probated, proven as authentic, that's what the court will apply almost in every case. There are a few exceptions, but almost in every case. So it's going to administer the estate according to the will, and that's estate administration. But we tend to call everything probate. We say,
well,
oh, it's all probate, but it's not really all probate.
You have to have closed probate in order to sell a property. Well, not really, but, I mean, sometimes you're required probate to be over.
Well, you can sell property inside the estate administration. There are ways to do that. You can ask the court for permission to sell it, or if all the beneficiaries agree, there's an affidavit form that can be utilized to quicken that up so you don't have to ask for permission to sell it and then ask the court to approve the sale and what it was sold for. But there is court oversight, and that's why those statutes are present, is to make sure that it's fairly done for those who are going to inherit from the estate. But if they all agree, there is a procedure that could be used to quicken the process from by quite a bit. And we've used that before with some of your clients, Becky, I know. So the idea is to sell it through the probate. Now, why would you do it? Why would you sell it through the estate administration, through the probate court, as opposed to after it's all over? Well, part of the reason for that is it's simpler many times. You have one grantor, which is the estate, approved by the court, approved by the personal representative, whereas if it goes to like seven kids and you're trying to sell it after it's been distributed to seven kids, you got seven names, you got to get their signatures, if they've got spouses, etc., there are a whole bunch of things that can happen. Some of them aren't very good. So you want to be careful about how that works.
It can get complicated, but what I tell folks that say, well, we can't sell the house until after probate's over, and that very often takes 3 or 4 months at least. And right?
Yeah, but it's not always after probate's over. You could do it during probate.
Well, and that's what I tell them. You have to get permission from the court to sell it. But then the money doesn't go to the heirs at that point. It has to go into an account for the estate.
It's protected by the court until the court decides. You can ask the court to distribute those funds. And if there's nothing else going on, the court many times will give an advance distribution. They rely a lot upon the lawyers who are before them quite often to say, to show here's the accounting and there's nothing else, or no other place for this funds to go, Judge. So many times the judges will approve an interim distribution at that point. Sometimes not, though. It depends upon the situation. You can get probates done fairly quickly, you know, within 6 months. Most of the times. Sometimes it takes a lot longer because there are contests. And that's where people look at trusts and say, well, let's put it into a trust, because the trust itself then avoids the probate process. And if everything is in the trust, then the trust itself can sell the property. And I know even your estate liquidating companies, ones that you utilize, love trusts because they're dealing with one person, which is the trustee. And that's all they have to have. They don't have to go to the personal representative and then get the court to approve it and go through that time and expense. So there's a way to do that. The other way, of course, is through the transfer on death deed, which we kind of alluded to a little bit, which is where you file of record that if you die owning this particular piece of real property, this is where it goes under a transfer on death deed. And then the beneficiary of that has 9 months after death to file an affidavit accepting that property. They don't have to.
But the personal property inside that
does not go through the transfer and death deed. No.
Right. So you have to. So an estate professional that liquidates estates, has estate sales, has to determine who the personal items belong to.
You have to look to see what the personal items are. Who was the owner? Are they in the estate or not? And that's what the probate, the estate administration does. That's what the personal representative does, is figure out what's in the estate, what's not in the estate. Does this belong to this person or that person, or does it belong to the estate? So you want to make sure you have that clarified. But if you put everything into the trust, you transfer even the personal items into the trust, then it's just the trust you have to deal with and no one else at that particular point.
So, boy, I'm dealing with one right now that's very complicated, that I'm going to require the court to, well, actually, I got a copy of the trust, I got a copy of the will sent to the title company, and the title company has to decide, does the trustee have the right to sell the property? Because the problem is the deed was never signed over to the trust.
And that's a huge issue. That's not properly funding the trust. And maybe it was intended that way. Maybe the creator did not want to put that property into the trust. We can't go back and find out. That's why when I do estate work with individuals and I sit down with them and talk with them about these different things, I try to be clear what they need to do, but also understand that not everybody wants to put everything into a trust or a singular trust. Sometimes they have a different trust. Sometimes they have other things they do, or sometimes they acquire other assets and don't put it into the trust. I've seen in the last 5 years a lot of situations where people have come to me with trusts that have been created years ago, many times, most of the time by their lawyers, and come to me and say, well, here's what I got now. Is it in the trust? Is this trust worth anything? And I'm reading through the trust, and I'm advising them as to what the trust says and whether their stuff is in the trust. Many times I find out that their real property, their personal property, isn't in the trust. So we try to fix that at that particular point. So it's in there so the trust that they paid for, which is good, actually does something for them instead of being just a collection of papers that have no merit to them.
Right.
I know this is the part, Becky, that we really get into people's lives of, you know, this is just their day-to-day. And if you don't have it set up correctly before it hits the time of sale and the probate, all those signatures matter. And knowing what you need really matters.
And if it's a period where the individual hasn't died but is incapacitated,
yeah,
that's even worse because now you've got a situation where they're still around, but maybe this property needs to be liquidated so they can afford some assisted living.
And it's not transfer on incapacitation deed.
No.
It is transfer on death, deed. So if someone becomes incapacitated, you're stuck unless you have gone to a good estate planning attorney that will do that for you.
Well, you can either have put it into the in a trust to do it that way. You can utilize a durable power of attorney if it allows that person who's appointed to liquidate real property and even homestead property. Many title companies are very skittish about that where there's not a guardianship because they're not sure that this individual, especially if it's not a spouse, has the authority to sell the real property out from under the disabled individual.
So we've got some questions to answer. And one of them being, who has a copy of the trust? Does the attorney that writes the trust retain a copy of that trust in order so if nobody can find it? We've got one property we can't sell because it's in the name of a trust, but nobody seems to have a copy of that trust. We're going to talk about that and have our smoking hot deals when we return. More on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Becky Ivins, and we are about to hear from my attorney, Ron Shalott, and I'm here with Mark Carr, who is an agent on my team. And we were talking about probate, and what, do you remember our question before we went to break, Ron?
The question before we went to break?
Yes, yes. What happens on probate if, finish your thought.
Okay, well, we were talking about the probate court approving the will and then approving the sale of real property.
Right.
If it needs to be done that way through the probate court. So the ease of doing that as opposed to putting it into names of several individuals and then selling it outside of that. But that's, you know, not always a one-size-fits-all thing either. You always have to look at the situation as well. And these are just general comments that you want to make sure that people are aware of. Yet, when you have the probate situation, you do want to make sure that everything is done with the court. The court does approve everything. So you do have clear and marketable title later on. That's always the key, is to make sure that this property does have clear and marketable title afterwards. And then we talked about the possibility of putting it into a trust to sell it through that way, which, you know, is always an option as well.
Well, and we really In most cases, this is a pretty simple process, right? I mean, it's and unless you run into complications where people haven't set it up right to start with, and I run into that an awful lot, where people have this big fancy trust, but it doesn't contain, like, the deed never gets filed. Maybe there is a deed. Can the deed be filed after someone dies, giving this to a trust?
No, you have to have that transfer prior to death.
It has to be
a record. Now, if you have a situation where you can't find the trust, then that gets to be an issue as to what did the trust really say. You look on the title to see if there's a memorandum of the trust. You try to find the trust itself to see what the trust says. Because if you don't have the trust, you wonder, well, is this trust even still in existence, or has it been revoked by destruction?
And does the attorney keep the trust? That was our question before we went to break. Is the attorney required to keep a copy of this trust for so many years?
Attorney's not required to keep it at all. And sometimes we don't keep it for a number of reasons. At times you don't want to be the person that's responsible to hold on to the trust. This is the individual's trust. They need to keep their trust. They need to keep the originals. They need to keep any amendments, plus all the associated paperwork. They should have it. Plus, you get the situation sometimes where lawyers pass away, or lawyers change firms, or lawyers move. And so you don't need to be tracking down the lawyer if it's with the individual. That's who needs to keep it.
Yeah. So if you can't find a trust, what do you do if you need to transfer property that it belongs to a trust? I've got that going on right now.
Well, it depends upon if it is truly in the trust or not.
It's in the trust. Trust me.
Trust me, it's in the trust.
Well, the mortgage is filed in the name of the trust, and the property is titled in the name of the trust.
But nobody can find the trust.
Nobody can find the trust.
See, then how do you say who's got the authority? Well, you look for a memorandum. A lot of times the memorandum of trust will be unfiled. In fact, I've just had this situation, too, where we can't really find the trust, but we do find the memorandum. So
it has been filed of record, and it should be filed of record if the mortgage is in that name.
Should be filed of record. So you,
well, it's
not. And that's the important, that's the importance of having a memorandum. And
so you have to go to the court and probate that, I would think.
Well, you might have to go to the court and ask for a quiet of the title. And you put it through that way to clear the title, because your title company, and that's really who's going to control this. You know, you can ask me, well, what do you do? But really it comes down to, what is the title company comfortable in clearing the title on? Because they're the ones that are going to have to insure it.
Right. Okay. Well, we appreciate your coming. We're going to get to our smoking hot deals here in a minute. And you're always a wealth of information for us, Ron. And to find Ron Shalott's information, all you have to do is go to BeckyIvins.com and look at Becky's favorites, and you are going to find those. Call our office if you ever want a specific type property, because we're real good at finding those. And to call my office at 722-3232, or go to BeckyIvins.com. Ivins is spelled a little differently, isn't it, Mark?
IVI.
IVINS. I always say, could only afford one vowel in my last name, so I used it twice. We want to thank Ron Shalott for showing up and enlightening us today. And he'll be here again in about 4 weeks, because there is a lot of legislation pending that has been, bills have been written, and it involves real property, which is your real estate. So we're going to have him come back and discuss that. We'll see you next week with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move.